This is Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. Cross Hope is broadcast daily and shares 5 minutes of hope and encouragement from the Word of God. Our companion website is www.crosshope.org. Now, with today's uplifting message, here's Randy.
If I were to ask you the most famous chapter of the book of 1 Corinthians, most of you, I think, would say, well, it has to be that chapter called the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13. And you're right. You've heard it read at weddings. You've seen it on plaques at Cracker Barrel. You've seen it on someone's family room wall on a framed plaque. But that chapter of the Bible was not meant just to be a plaque in your life or a saying on a card. It was meant to be the pattern for living and the pattern for loving. 2 weeks on this one chapter alone, from Mother's Day and Father's Day on 1 Corinthians 13. God bless you as you listen this week to the message given on Mother's Day.
From time to time, I come across a story, and I really mean this, that really grabs my heart. It can even be a funny story, but there's something about this story that I'm going to begin with that really grabbed my heart when I read it, because it was on one level, funny. On another level, it was crazy to think that people actually thought like this back in the 1950s. And on a third level, it talks about a mother's love for her son. All three are in this story. It's a sermon title by a minister by the name of Forrest Church. What a great name for a minister, Forrest Church from New York. And what grabbed my attention was seeing the title of his sermon, How My Mother Saved Me from the Nuclear Bomb. Well, that got my attention, how my mom saved me from the nuclear bomb. Listen to it. It's a powerful story. The year was 1958. Fire drills in elementary schools had been temporarily replaced by nuclear attack drills. Here's what would happen. The alarm would go off, and all of us would dutifully tuck ourselves under our desks. We were told, and this is what's insane about this when you think about it, we were told that from the moment of the first alert to the arrival of the nuclear missiles was about 10 minutes. We had 10 minutes. Remember that time. 3 times a year, we practiced this. I can assure you, and some of you will remember, that 10 minutes pass very slowly when you're crouching under your desk at school waiting for the imaginary bomb to fall. So I planned my great escape. I practiced running home after school every day. Despite a lack of athletic ability, I finally was able to get my run from the school to the house under 10 minutes. My mother completely understood. She said this, "If there were ever a nuclear attack, I'd want you here with me, not at school, under your stupid desk." I love that. So my mother went to the principal. This is really touching, get this. My mother went to the principal and requested that in the event of a nuclear attack, I might have the permission to run home and die with her. The result was a new school policy. Should a nuclear attack take place, upon securing parental permission slips, those children who could run home within 10 minutes would be excused from school. Now, that's an unbelievable story, but true. That you can, if you can make it home in 10 minutes so you can die with your mom, was the attitude back in 1958 where he grew up. You know what that is for me? It's just a little snippet of a mother's love for her son. She understood why it was important for her son to be able to get home in 10 minutes. Today we're going to talk about the great equation. It has nothing to do with equations you're used to in mathematics. But I'm going to share with you in a few minutes what I feel is the greatest equation, mathematical equation of life. Because everything in your marriage, everything in your family, everything in this church hinges on believing and following this equation that I'm going to share in a few minutes.
Well, we'll continue this message from the first 7 verses of chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians tomorrow on Cross Hope. Our website is crosshope.org.
Today we're going to talk about the great equation. It has nothing to do with equations you're used to in mathematics. But I'm going to share with you in a few minutes what I feel is the greatest equation, mathematical equation of life. Because everything in your marriage, everything in your family, everything in this church hinges on believing and following this equation that I'm going to share in a few minutes. I'm going to read the first seven verses, 1 Corinthians 13. Paul is speaking to this church at a wild city called Corinth, and he says this: "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames," get this, people actually back in this day would volunteer to be burned at the stake for the cause of Christ. They wanted to die as a martyr. And Paul said, "I can surrender my body to the fire, to the flames, but if I have not love, I gain nothing." Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always, always perseveres. When the Apostle Paul wrote these words to the church at Corinth, I want to tell you what he did not have in mind. He did not have in mind that someday these would be on a plaque you could buy at a restaurant called Cracker Barrel. That was not in his thinking at all. When he wrote that, he didn't think, you know, now people will use this years, thousands of years from now, hundreds of years from now, to read at weddings. He had none of that in mind. He didn't have an idea that it would go on somebody's refrigerator as a nice sentimental thought. He wrote these words, listen carefully because this is so important. He wrote it to a church that had anything but love in that church. If you read the first eight chapters with me as we preached through it, this was a church that had pride. People were full of pride in this church. Pride of what? Their knowledge. Proud of their intellect, their status in life. They were divided into camps. We're told that they were divided. The church was divided at least into four groups, if not more. Paul said they were argumentative, they fought with one another, they were jealous, they were envious, they tolerated immorality in the church. The list goes on and on, 10 different things that Paul has to deal with. He wrote this chapter called 1 Corinthians 13 for this reason, because people weren't loving one another in the church at Corinth. They didn't know what love was like at the church at Corinth, and here's what I want to share with you. There are homes that are lacking love in this room, represented in this room today. There are families, there are marriages that are lacking that. So therefore, what I want to do is bring up the great equation of life. If you write down nothing about this sermon, I'd like for you to write this down, put it in your wallet, put it somewhere. Let's bring up the great equation. Here it is. Anything minus love equals zero. Anything in my life minus love equals zero. Now, that may be an oversimplification. It may be you say, well, life isn't that simple. I know it's not that simple, but it's that important, that statement. Anything minus love equals zero. That's true in a marriage. That's true in a family. It's true in a church.
Well, my friend, do you believe that to be true, that that's the great equation of life, that anything minus love equals zero? We'll continue this message tomorrow on CrossHope. That's crosshope.org.
Let's bring up verse 1 again, if we could. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Paul said you can be an orator. You can be glib on your feet. You can sweet talk your way out of a speeding ticket better than anybody. You can talk in front of a group. You can talk in front of two people. You can talk to your kids. You can talk to your parents. And you can talk your way into something or out of something. Paul said, if you can have the tongue of an angel, so to speak, the voice of an angel, but if you don't have love, you're only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. That's called hyperbole. He's exaggerating to make a point. And what a point that does it make? Anything minus love in my life equals zero. Let's bring up verse 2. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. Talk about a couple of those phrases. If I can fathom all mysteries, do you know what that means? Have you ever met anybody that gives you the impression they've got everything figured out in life? You bring up an issue. Oh, I can explain that to you. I've got it all figured out. Even if you can fathom all mysteries and you have all knowledge, and remember, knowledge was important to the Corinthian people. They prided themselves on their knowledge. Annie and I, several years ago, were reading an autobiography that somebody had written where they talked about their IQ. And I'm not sure why he needed to mention his IQ, but he did. It's an autobiography about himself. I guess he can write anything he wants. And he said he had an IQ of 160. Well, if you know anything about intelligence quotient, 100 is normal, is average. So 160, I looked it up, that's the IQ of Einstein. So this man was saying, I had an IQ that was equivalent to that or higher than Einstein. Annie and I were reading that. I looked at her and I said, you know, don't you think that I have an IQ over 100? And she said, maybe 101. And it kind of kept me humble. But people, why is it that Paul mentions knowledge for this reason? Remember what we studied a few weeks ago? Knowledge puffs up. Knowledge is ego building. Knowledge is something that pumps up the one who possesses the knowledge, and people take pride in knowledge. People take pride in what they know. And Paul said, I can have the fathom all mysteries and all knowledge and have a faith that moves mountains. I can even say to a mountain, jump, and the mountain jumps. But if I have not love, I am nothing. Then let's bring up the third verse. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. I may be generous. I may give everything I have to the poor. And I may sacrifice my life on the altar of something, the altar of God even. But if I don't have love, I gain nothing. Then in verse 4 through 7, Paul lists the qualities of love. I want to go through them very quickly. Verse 4, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. When it says love is patient, it's talking about patience with people, not with circumstances. Most of the impatience in your life has a name on it. Let me say that again. Most of the impatience in your life has a name on it. What does that mean? You're impatient with somebody in your family. You're impatient with a spouse. You're impatient with one of your children. You're impatient with people at work. Most of the impatience in our lives has a name on it. And the first quality, I find this intriguing, that the Apostle Paul says right out of the gate, love is patient. And here's what I found. The man that demands patience from other people oftentimes is the man that never shows it to anybody else. You ever notice that? I find this intriguing, that the Apostle Paul says right out of the gate, love is patient. And here's what I found. The man that demands patience from other people oftentimes is the man that never shows it to anybody else. You ever notice that? Sometimes a woman who demands patience from everyone else, and you better understand me and my situation, and you better understand what I'm going through right now, is the very woman who doesn't give that same benefit to someone else and demands this and this and this. So, but love is patient. Why? Because anything minus love equals zero. Love is kind. I found out it's not kindness in the sense of a feeling. You may think of yourself as a kind man or a kind woman. I'm just kind to everybody. According to the commentaries, what this means is it's kindness that's lived out in everyday life. If you're a kind man, can you point to things that you do that are kind? If you consider yourself a kind woman, are there things you can point to and say, here's what I do that manifests or demonstrates the kindness that I claim to possess? It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. Listen carefully. Show me a home where there's envy, boasting, and pride, and love is gone. It's hard for people to love one another who envy one another. It's hard for people that are constantly trying to boast and outboast the other person what's going on in their life to feel a feeling of love. Love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. Why? Because anything minus love equals zero. Verse 5, love is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Rudeness has to do with an attitude of the spirit. Listen to that again. Rudeness has to do with an attitude of your spirit. Rudeness is picked up in different ways. You can be rude with your smiling. You can be rude with, you know, smile to, as I use that expression before, you can smile till your teeth are dry and still be rude. You can have a spirit of rudeness. And here's what I said in the first service that I think is true. There's something wrong when a husband shows more kindness and graciousness to a waitress at a restaurant than he does to his own wife and children. And conversely, there's something wrong when a wife shows more courtesy and more graciousness to a clerk at Macy's or the Elder Beerman or Target or wherever than she does to her own husband or to her own children. Rudeness is oftentimes manifested at the very people that we claim to love the most. Isn't that interesting? Who are we the rudest with? The people we say we love. We can be rude to those people. It's not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. And it keeps no record of wrongs. Let's talk about that. To keep a record of wrongs means this: you're a scorekeeper. I heard a woman say one time, parenthetically, she was just in a conversation, and she said, "God, deliver me from the scorekeepers of life." I knew what she meant. God, deliver me from the scorekeepers of life, people that are always keeping score. There you go again. That's the third time this week. There it's the fourth time, and we keep score on everybody's behavior. And we even keep either mental notes or we keep it on paper where we record everything that people do. And Paul said, love, true love, keeps no record of wrongs. Does that mean you tolerate bad behavior? That's not what Paul says. It means you're not a scorekeeper. It's not 7-3 this week, and it's 10-5 next week, and it was 5-4 the week before that. Love keeps no record of wrongs. Let's bring up the next one. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Delighting in evil means this: you take joy privately when somebody else messes up. You get a kick out of that. That's delighting in evil. I hope he falls flat on his face at work. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Delighting in evil means this: you take joy privately when somebody else messes up. You get a kick out of that. That's delighting in evil. I hope he falls flat on his face at work. Well, I hope she fails at this venture or that venture. I hope she has problems in her marriage. I hope she has problems with her health. And love, true love, does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Everything that's right and positive. Why? Because anything minus love equals zero. Let's bring up verse 7. It's a series of always statements. Love always protects. It always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. You know what's interesting about the word always? I didn't bring this up in the first service. Think of how many times you've used the word always with your husband or wife or your kids. And here's how you used it. You always do that. You always talk like that. You always behave that way. And we use the word always in a negative context. You do, and so do I. And we use it to generalize people's behavior. And here Paul uses it in a positive way. Love always protects. Love always trusts. It always hopes, and it always perseveres. What is it that people will be able to say about you when you're dead and gone that you did always? Hopefully, you loved. Why? Because anything minus love equals zero. I told a powerful story, I think I did, written by Janelle Williams Paris, who is a professor of anthropology at Bethel College, St. Paul, Minnesota. 5 years ago, Janelle had triplet boys who died shortly after birth. I can't imagine the grief of having three baby boys and losing all three of them. So Janelle says Mother's Day is extremely difficult for her, and understandably so. And yet she has some powerful things to say about Mother's Day that I want to share with every mother that's here today, because it's good advice for everybody, men or women. She says this: let's be gentle with each other this Mother's Day. Let's celebrate with the women who do have happy families. And there are people who seem happy. Let's rejoice with them. But let's also remember the women and the men and the girls and boys who were deeply hurt by their mothers, physically and emotionally. Let's remember the mothers who have lost their children. Let's remember the women who long to be wives and mothers, but they're not. Let's come together and worship Jesus Christ alone, not an idealized image of our mothers or ourselves. Mother's Day will be hard for me this year, no matter what. But here's what she says, but I'll do my best to be blessed on that day. Instead of comparing myself to greeting card moms, I'll think of the real women in my life who carry both great happiness and deep sorrows. I'll remember women in my own story, my own Christian story, who include Eve, Sarah, Rachel, Hannah, and Mary. And I'll go to church, get this, not to celebrate motherhood on Mother's Day, but to receive the love of God who loves us all. I'll go to church on Mother's Day, not to celebrate motherhood, but to receive the love of God who loves us all. Psalm 103 says, like as a father who has compassion on his children, so the Lord is to us.
Well, this week and next, two messages taken from the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, the love chapter of the Bible, the most well-known chapter of 1 Corinthians in my mind. We want you to hear part two from verses 8 through the end of the chapter about the qualities of love and the permanence of love. There's nothing more permanent in your life than the love of Christ. God bless you.
You've been listening to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. For more information about this ministry or to re-listen to any message heard on this broadcast, go to our website at crosshope.org. Be sure to join us at this same time each weekday or listen at www.crosshope.org. Cross Hope is listener-supported and is produced by Cross Hope Ministries, Incorporated.